podcast called Living the Stream comes to you each week. Streaming recommendations during NFL season, it's not just tongue-in-cheek. Quarterback, defense, tight end recommendations based on opposition matchup. Here are your podcast hosts, J.J. Zacharyson and Danny Carter, Living the Stream.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Living the Stream. I'm J.J. Zacharyson, the late-round quarterback. And as always, I am joined by my lovely co-host, Denny Carter. Denny, what's going on, man?
I am happy to be, you know, talking to you after, what, 3.5 months or so on the air. And I am committed to being less terrible in 2017.
Is that what's going on now? You're gonna be less terrible?
That's my promise. It's a lofty promise, but it's one that I feel I need to make and I need to keep.
I feel like Steve Smith got to you.
you mean my boss?
Yes, your boss, Steve Smith. You need to, okay. So it's been, I don't know, we haven't done this since the beginning of January, late December. So it has been like a good 3 months. So a lot's happened. Like I had 3 children.
Whoa!
During wow. This no, a lot's happened though. A lot has happened. One of the best things that happened though, which almost forced us to record a podcast strictly on this topic, was the Steve Smith Denny Carter throwdown on Twitter. So Denny, the floor is yours. Tell everyone what went down.
Yeah. So this is a brief oral history, if you will. Oral, nice. And the of how I was owned on the internet by former Ravens great Steve Smith. So I was just kind of tweeting, you know, without any real purpose. I mean, does anybody have a purpose when they tweet? But I wasn't
you tweeting without a purpose.
Right. I know you're shocked. About Steve Smith being hired as an analyst, I think, for NFL Network. And I don't know. I was just talking about how I never really liked the style of his play, like how he'd go berserk every time he gained 7 yards. If it makes any sense, like my ideal, you know, football demeanor is like Ricky Williams. Sure. Like I love the way Ricky Williams like looked like he couldn't give a shit every time he scored a touchdown.
Sure. Which is the opposite of Steve Smith.
Complete opposite, right? Yeah. And I'm not saying Steve Smith is bad because of it. It was just something I was tweeting. And so Matt Harmon, our friend from NFL Network, says to me on Twitter, you got to stop. He's going to find these tweets. And I was like, what does Steve Smith care about me for?
Right.
And but Matt was right. Steve Smith found those tweets within the hour, and then I think tweeted 4 times at me.
Yes.
Destroying me, destroying, you know, fantasy in general, but destroying me. And he actually went to the Draft Day Consultants website.
Sure did.
Which I appreciate. Thank you for that. And he asked me if he could own me for the year for our price of $199.99.
it was unreal.
And so he actually asked me if he could own me. And then so I was going along with it, and it actually ended up being the best promotional device that I could have ever dreamed of for Draft Day Consultants. We got a ton of new followers on Twitter. We got some inquiries saying, hey, I saw Steve Smith destroy the owner of Draft Day Consultants.
But
I'm interested in your service. So that was a nice little bump, and I can't say I'm sorry. Let's put it that way.
No PR is bad PR.
No, and you are correct about that. I also really enjoyed the people who took the took it seriously, and I'm looking through the tweets right now of random people that I don't know.
Yeah.
And they tweeted at me. One guy goes, "LOL, Steve Smith just owned an unemployed football writer." Wait, hold on 1 second. I may be unemployed, but I am no football writer.
Oh, so I love the people on Twitter who just like who go to bat no matter what for their favorite players.
Yeah, I got inundated by Ravens fans the next day who, I mean, first of all, he played for the Ravens for what, like 20 minutes? and he's probably the best player in the history of the franchise. So people, Ravens fans were mentioned saying, you know, like, oh, you don't come at Steve Smith, you're going to get, you know, this and that. I couldn't believe that they thought I was being serious with my tweets, my snarky tweets about how he used to play. Whatever. It was fun. My mentions were actually on fire. Like every time I opened my phone that night, flames would come out and like nip at my eyebrows.
Right. I'm actually looking at Denny. Denny's still growing his eyebrows back right now.
I think they're coming back by June.
Yeah. Yeah. That's nuts. I don't mind Steve Smith like you do. I kind of like Steve Smith because I think it's hilarious how like I like him more somewhat ironically. Like mm-hmm. I don't like him for that. I like him because I think it's hilarious that he's like so over the top, right?
He's so but the investment that he put in. So he went to my profile. He clicked on links. He clicked on Draft Day Consultants. He checked out the site.
He went to the pricing page.
Went to the price page, which is that's like a scroll down menu. Yeah. I mean, he probably scoured the whole site, you know, looking for some way to own me online. And then the best part is that thescore.com wrote a quick blog post saying Steve Smith owns Troll on Twitter.
Yes, that's
and
the other part
though. I was like, excuse me, but like, do I qualify just as a troll? Am I like an egg?
No,
out here
you're not a troll. A troll is Sully. Sully's a troll.
I'm not, first of all, I mean, but it would be one thing if I had like 11 followers and I was an egg and I was like calling out his, right, like, you know, children or wife or something. I mean, right. I was joking, obviously, and so I appreciate the write up, but I think that I qualify as something slightly above troll. I don't know, maybe.
I think Steve Smith's been trolling us on NFL Network with his analysis, to be honest.
Oh no,
I don't know. It's just absurd. I was just watching the draft coverage because I'm part of hashtag Draft Twitter this year, and his analysis. His number one wide receiver is Cooper Kupp this season, who is legitimate. I mean, he's a 24-year-old wide receiver who is, wow, is like primarily a slot guy who overachieved at a smaller school, and it's an absurd thing to reason. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to put him number one. But he said that on air, like unprompted, and you could tell everyone just felt uncomfortable because he's basically saying this like, mid to late second round, maybe third round pick is the best overall wide receiver. And not only is this guy like not a typical, you know, outside size wideout, he ran like a 4.62 or something like that. Like,
oh my god,
he's not even like athletic. But like when he said it, I was like, wait, did that seriously just happen? And I went to Twitter. I was like, did Steve Smith just say Cooper Kupp is the best wide receiver in this draft? So that's the kind of take that Steve Smith is throwing out there on NFL Network right now. So how dare he? How dare he say what he did about Draft Day Consultants?
Exactly. I mean, he might, if he's playing fantasy football, he might need our help. That's what I would say. Also, I know that I want to acknowledge that I know you're part of Draft Twitter right now. And even though it took me a couple of days to sort of get used to that, I welcome it. I think it's good. It's good for your hashtag brand. I also think it's good for Draft Twitter to have someone in there who is slightly more analytical in his approach as opposed to much of what I see on Draft Twitter, which is like, holy shit, this spin move.
Yes,
you know,
yes. Well, the thing is, this season, I like, historically, I've followed and done a little research, but this year I'm actually like digging in deep, like building. I built a good database this offseason, digging in deep. Just trying to be good at this thing, or at least trying to be reasonable with it. So it's been fun.
Look, you're always reasonable and good with your analysis. I'm sure you can translate it over to the draft side.
Hey, thanks, Denny. Hey, by the way, did you see Josh Norris's combine videos?
I love that video so much. I love the GIF that you made of him running after the hot pockets or whatever.
when Moss says the hot pockets are ready.
All that stuff made my week. It made me want to do it. I mean, I was jealous that I have no access to that because I want to do that stuff so bad.
We need to officially do the 40. I have a runner injury right now, but once I'm over it, we need to do it, and we'll record, and I'll put a video together, and we will officially have the 40 done. Then I can tell everyone that I truly am faster than Justin Perillo. Like I will have data to show that I'm faster than Justin Perillo.
I'm not going to confirm or deny that I have been doing wind sprints.
Okay, now I'm gonna. Man, look at. Are you going to the track?
No, just around my neighborhood. I mean, I look
you're doing it in your basement.
I look like an absolute maniac. I mean, people are scared of me in the neighborhood. But yeah, like I'll do my regular run, and then at the end, I will sprint as hard as I can for like 100 yards. I look like I just stole something.
But then they see your hair, and they're like, no.
No one with that kind of hair is stealing.
No one with that hair steals stuff. There's no chance. All right, Denny. Well, today on the show, we don't have a sponsor because we don't podcast enough during the off season.
No, we don't.
But we do have an agenda, and we're going to talk about, since free agency just ended, it was kind of a weak free. Like, there were some people on Twitter that were overly excited about this free agency period and the people involved in this free agency class. But from a fantasy football standpoint, it was pretty garbage. It was trash. It wasn't that fun. It's like Alshon and like who was good in this free agency class that you really, really actually care about?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was disappointing to see both Alshon and Torrey going to Philadelphia, where they are, you know, basically, out of the fantasy football landscape in that offense.
So. Right. I mean, like, and people are still gonna draft Alshon close-ish to where they usually draft out or they would have otherwise. I don't really see that. But in general, like he was the blue chip free agent from a fantasy perspective, and his landing spot wasn't like anything immensely desirable, right? So I think bottom line is that the free agency period, guys did move places. There are some guys that I'm excited about, but it wasn't anything like insane where a guy went from, you know, the fifth round to the second round or anything like that. But what we're going to do is we're going to give a couple guys that we like the move in terms of fantasy and what that person can provide. And then we'll give a couple guys who we don't like, because it's not fun to only look at the positives in fantasy football. I'm so sick of analysis that will never say something bad about a player, because when you do analysis and you say something bad about a player, that's when you're really putting yourself out there.
Sure.
Right? I'm just sick, and you see that a lot with the draft and prospects and stuff. Everyone loves everyone. It's like the John Gruden thing. You know, John Gruden loves everyone.
Loves everyone, but you're also, even though you are, it's important to talk about, you know, negatives. You're also, at the risk of inflaming people who love the landing spot.
Exactly.
Love the player. You know.
Right. Right. Yeah. So. It's a difficult thing to balance, but I'm pretty okay with trashing players in their situations as long as there's logic behind it. So let's dig into it, Denny. Talk about someone who you think. Well, we'll start with the good. And we'll end with the bad. Start with someone who you are very excited about, given where they changed locations.
I am fairly excited, as you may see on Twitter, about Rex Burkhead / Goathead.
Goathead, right?
Going to New England. I think so. There are a few things that you know maybe make me a little bit skeptical that he's going to be like a locked and loaded every week fantasy starter, including the fact that the big back for New England is not not always a plug and play option over the years. But so the biggest knock on him right now, as I see it on Twitter, is that he's much smaller than LeGarrette Blount. He's 27 pounds lighter and 3 inches shorter. Okay,
I thought you were going to say he's much whiter than LeGarrette Blount.
He's the whitest possible football player, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like I think, is there anybody whiter? I don't know. I don't, at running back, no way. I mean, he makes He makes Danny Woodhead look something other than white, I can say.
Right.
But so Burkhead is significantly smaller than LeGarrette Blount. But LeGarrette Blount has the role primarily taken by, you know, before him, a few years before him, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, who Ben Jarvis Green Ellis is 1 inch taller than Rex Burkhead and 2 pounds heavier. So they're basically the same size, okay? And Green Ellis was RB22 in 2011 when he had 11 touchdowns, and he was RB15 in 2010 when he scored 13 touchdowns. Now, no one should pencil in Burkhead for, you know, like Blount's absurd 18 touchdowns, okay, which I think is the most since Adrian Peterson some years ago. So that's not what I'm not saying he's locked and loaded for that. But what says, you know, if he truly does have that role, then what says he can't score double digit touchdowns? And I think that's where his value will come in. And right now he's going off the board at RB45.
Yeah.
And Blount was RB34 last year off the board in August. So I think that he will present a value. I do think that the hype machine will take hold at some point. And it will churn out, you know, a bunch of pieces about how much potential Burkhead has, and I could see him going. What do you think? Fourth round eventually by August. If it's
locked in that he is in that role, I think that he'll certainly be like a top seven round guy or so. Like or top six round or so. If it's for sure that he's in that role, where would you be drafting him in the fourth round?
I loathe to talk about August and March, but
I got you.
I will because we have this podcast right now.
That's right, because we're talking about fantasy football.
I need to just go ahead and bite the bullet and do that. I believe I will feel comfortable drafting him in the fourth or fifth round at some point.
Let me ask you this. Marshawn Lynch signs with Oakland. Who do you draft first, Marshawn or Rex Burkhead?
I mean, I'm not leaning. I mean, it's close, but do we remember how horrendous Marshawn Lynch was in his final year?
Right. Yeah, I think that there's going to be this like ambiguous group with massive upside potentially in that area of the draft. I think you're probably more optimistic than I am about Burkhead, but it's just the way that we are with fantasy football generally. Because like I could see a path to where this is something legitimate, but I can also see a path where stuff changes throughout this process from March to August. That's the only reason I ask. Like the hypothetical, if everything was perfect, that's where like if we knew, like seriously, I mean if we knew that LeGarrette Blount would be LeGarrette Blount, we would have drafted him in the top five rounds last year, right?
Sure.
So if we know that about Rex Burkhead, then we should probably act accordingly in some way. So it's a really interesting situation. Better pass catcher than LeGarrette Blount too, which is a plus. So it's going to be really interesting. That offense is going to be effing insane next year.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is so much positive game script. You want the guy who's going to take handoffs from Brady while they bleed the clock, right? I mean, that's such a valuable fantasy football asset to have.
Yeah. Rest in peace, my boy Deion Lewis.
Oh, man, yes.
My boy. All right, I'm going to talk about DeSean Jackson as a guy that I think took a step forward with his new location. He signed with Tampa Bay. We know DeSean Jackson's strength is getting down the field. Over the last 5 years, he's averaged 11.51 air yards per catch and 5.91 yards after the catch per catch. So for some perspective, someone with that air yards profile, so how many air yards he's getting per catch, usually sees a yak per catch rate of 3.85. So he's basically seen two more yards after the catch per catch than what a usual guy does in his situation from an air yard standpoint, which is just absolutely absurd. The thing, though, the match here is just perfect. Last year, Jameis Winston threw the ball third most often in the NFL, that going 16-plus yards through the air. Over 66% of his yards actually came through the air, Jameis Winston, which is the most in the entire league, which that's too much. That's too high of a number. That's not what you want. But what that tells me And what it says is he didn't get enough yards after the catch on his passes, right? I mean, he's he's throwing the ball deep, number one. I just shared that with you. But the fact that such a high percentage of his throws or such a high percentage of his yardage total is coming from the air tells us that he's not getting yak or he's just a terrible deep ball thrower, which could be a little bit of both. But with that being said, I think that a lot of the I think a lot of it had to do with that they just force fed Mike Evans. So when you force feed a wide receiver like that, naturally he's just he's not going to have much room to move after he catches the ball, which is why Evans was one of the worst player in expected yards after the catch this past season, just because he was force fed. It was very much like DeAndre Hopkins in 2015. Tampa Bay last season, when they started winning a little bit more, they didn't throw the ball as much down the stretch as they started to get a little bit better, but they had a middle of the road pass attempt number. They had threw 578 times. I would expect something fairly similar, maybe a little less, but even still, I think they're going to be a, you know, 16th to 16th ish ranked team in terms of attempts. So if that's the case, there's plenty of targets here for DeSean Jackson. So Evans will probably see a little bit of a dip in volume. He had a 29.93% market share last year, which is absurd. Adam Humphries could easily decrease a little bit. They lost Russell Shepard. So there's going to be enough volume, I think, for DeSean Jackson to thrive. And DeSean Jackson, as we know, doesn't need an insane market share in order to thrive in fantasy football. So overall, I think the match is perfect because you get a complimentary piece in DeSean Jackson, which will work perfectly with Mike Evans. I mean, I can't think of a better pairing. I can't think of a better situation, really, for DeSean Jackson to go to with a stud in Mike Evans opposite of him. He's going to be able to stretch the field. They're not afraid to throw the ball down the field. Winston does have a big arm. And if they continue to do that, DeSean Jackson is going to really, really benefit from it.
Yeah, I think those two are going to shred some defenses. I do think that Mike Evans' usage will have to change in order for him to be productive outside of, you know, when Tampa's being blown out. You know, we talked about that on Twitter a few times. Is you watching a Tampa game, you knew that if they got a lead, it was going to be trouble,
right?
You know, fantasy wise for Mike Evans, because they were not going to force feed him the ball. He's not getting a bunch of bubble screens and slants. You know, I mean, it was kind of all or nothing with him. So I'm wondering if D-Jax makes that even more volatile for him.
Yeah, I wrote an article earlier, like in January, I think that was basically, I think it was titled like Mike Evans 2016 was a lot like DeAndre Hopkins 2015. And the reason for that is they had very similar air yard profiles. They were force fed, but when their teams got better, so if you recall that Houston team 2 years ago was dreadful to start the season, then they played that Miami game. They got completely roasted in that game, but the game, like towards the second half, they started to play better. And then towards the second half of the season, the defense stepped up. Everything changed in that offense. They became very, very much more run heavy. And so as a result of that, DeAndre Hopkins didn't see nearly as much volume. That's really the reason why he tailed off. You know, he was still like a low end one, but he was like breaking records to start the season 2 years ago.
And yeah, he was on pace for 200 targets.
Yeah, right, exactly. And that's very, very similar to what happened with Mike Evans. Not to that degree necessarily, but you have to pay attention to the fact that Tampa Bay became a better team down the stretch. Now, like I said, I think that, you know, usually if a player loses volume, if you want him to sustain his level of play from the previous year, you need him to increase his efficiency. And I think that's what this move does for Mike Evans. So even if Mike Evans loses 20 targets, I don't think that that's the end of the world for Mike Evans' fantasy value. I think if anything, it just makes him more, this move makes him more efficient, and he could be just as good as he was last year.
Yeah, I got that.
All right, Denny, next guy for you.
So in my notes, I have him listed as Jack Doyle, and then in parentheses, Goatle, GOATYLE.
Of course.
Naturally.
Because who isn't the goat when you run a 4.9 40?
4.9.
Yeah.
That's just nuts. So yeah, he was I don't want to say a star of LTS last year, but he was featured several times.
Yeah, he was.
Including, I think the week he went off against Tennessee.
Yeah.
When I have it here, he has he had 10 targets.
Yeah, I remember
nine receptions for and two touchdowns against the Titans. So
even if he wasn't, we're taking credit for it.
Yeah, let's just do that. That's fine. There is no archive of the show.
Well, I deleted all the old podcasts. So no one will know.
Oh, thank God. No one wants to hear that anyway. So tight ends last year for Indianapolis had 141 total targets. Okay. Jack Doyle saw 72 of those targets and finished as the tight end 12. A top 12 tight end is nothing spectacular, but I think it's noteworthy. 72 targets, tight end 12, and only five touchdowns. So it's not like he scored an inordinate number of touchdowns. He didn't post 8 or 10 touchdowns, and so it's just five, and he finishes top 12. So combine that with Dwayne Allen is no longer with us. No, I'm just he's with the Patriots, and that was morbid. I didn't mean to be so morbid. So Indianapolis QBs last year had the fifth most dropbacks in the NFL. They had the third most, or Andrew Luck had the third most in 2014, which is the last season he was healthy for all 16 weeks. And so this offense, barring some sort of drastic transition, is going to be one of the pass happiest offenses again. In 2017.
Still a bad defense.
Right, bad defense. I don't think that maybe they're going to improve their running game through the draft, but let's just say they won't for now. And so there are a lot of targets to be had. Dwayne Allen's out of the picture. Jack Doyle is this, I believe, listed as the starter as of now. Look, a lot could happen. The Colts could draft one of these freakish tight ends in sometime in the NFL draft, and all this is out the window. But Doyle's going as tight end 14 right now in MFL 10s, which I think is a fair price. I would be buying him at that price if Maryland allowed MFL 10s, which does not.
Yeah, I think people are going to find reasons to not draft Doyle this year.
Really?
I don't think he's sexy enough for people.
Oh, no. He's totally unsexy. He is perfect for the LTS
brand. Yeah. Like, I will own Doyle this year for sure. I dig it. I'm going to, instead of talking about like an obvious person, I'm going to talk about Ted Ginn. Only because I need to get it out there that I love this situation for him. And I didn't write an article or tweet about him or anything like that. So I might as well throw it out there on Living the Stream. First off, can we like stop this whole drops thing? Like, can we like be done with this? Like, I get that a wide receiver I get that Ted Ginn drops the ball a lot. He has a pretty high drop rate, like 90th percentile drop rate, and probably higher. And it's only exaggerated because he seems to drop those deep passes all the time, right? Look, to have a drop in the first place, you have to get open, which is very, very important for a wide receiver. And the other thing to it too is that the sheer number of drops that a player has doesn't vary all that much to the point where like we need to talk about it, right? Like a guy with 15 drops to a guy with 10 drops to a guy with 5 drops, are we really talking about this right now? Does it really matter? It should not. I'm gonna have a separate podcast on drops, but anyway, Ginn in Carolina saw about a 17% and then about a 19% target market share the last 2 years, which totaled 95 and 96 targets. So that's pretty good volume for him overall. Definitely not bad. But in New Orleans, his new spot, I feel like Ted Ginn was like meant to play in New Orleans. But
yes,
Brandon Cooks is gone, which takes away 17.36% of that team's market share from last year. But that was 117 targets because New Orleans throws the ball a lot more than Carolina does. We know what Ginn does and what he's good at is that's deep balls, similar to what I was talking about with DeSean Jackson. Drew Brees last year was 8th. In 15 plus air yard attempt passes, and he had the most air yards in football he had the most yards of those types of passes. He ranked 3rd the year before in yards on 15 plus yard throws, and then 2nd in 2014, 1st in 2013, 4th in 2012, 2nd in 2011. Drew Brees gets yards while throwing it deep. I mean, that's the bottom line. So it's a really good fit from that perspective. And the other thing too, you know, I'm naming years from 2011, 2012. Everyone keeps saying like, oh, Drew Brees has only been able to do this because he's had Brandon Cooks, and, you know, Ted Ginn isn't Brandon Cooks. Well, to most analysts, and, you know, but like Drew Brees has done this throughout his career. Brandon Cooks has only been there for 3 years. And the other thing that I kind of thought about today when thinking about Ted Ginn, if you look at the other guys who have played this role in that offense, maybe a Robert Meacham, that's, or Devery Henderson or something, you know, like some of those vertical wide receivers that have been in this role, none of them had success outside of New Orleans. Remember Robert Meacham signed with the Chargers and didn't do anything, everyone thought he was going to be a fantasy stud in San Diego and stuff.
He had some of the most devastating drops. I know you're just talking about drops.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Meacham was a debacle in San Diego.
Yeah. But you know, the one thing that Ted Ginn actually, like, people hate Ted Ginn because he was a bust to start his career, but he's turned around his career. I mean, he hasn't been that bad in an offense in Carolina where it certainly fit him well, but even still, Ted Ginn has been good elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And I think that matters to a degree. Like, I think Ted Ginn is a better wide receiver than what people give him credit for. Even if he is a one-trick pony, I don't care. I think that he has 95 to 100 target. I think that's like a solid projection from a projection standpoint. I think he has a 110 target, like, reasonable ceiling. And if you combine that with the efficiency of Drew Brees and these deep passes, I think that he has like a decent, maybe mid wide, maybe low end wide receiver two ceiling, or like a reasonable ceiling, you know, true ceiling, maybe mid wide receiver two. But I think that he's in a really, really good situation with no Brandon Cooks there and not a ton of mouths to feed in general.
You probably will not be able to get a 100 target guy any cheaper than Ted Ginn.
Yeah, and not only that, you're getting what blows my mind, because this is all name recognition. That's the reason why Ted Ginn's not going to go as high as he should, is because of who he is. But you're going to get a potential 90 target guy in a Drew Brees offense for nothing. Mm-hmm. What I expect, I hope that his ADP starts to rise a little bit more, because he's going late.
I like it.
All right, Denny, give us actually, I'll go with one guy. I'll go first with one guy whose stock took a hit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna go with Latavius Murray, who I know you were into last year.
I was, and I thought it was really gonna come.
It kind of, no, look, Latavius was fine last year. He scored 12 touchdowns. He was fine.
Your voice went up 2 octaves when you said that. You didn't mean it.
No,
you did not mean that.
From a fantasy standpoint, he was fine. From a real standpoint, he's a jag. I think he's just a guy. I wrote an article last year. I think you remember it. Where it was titled Latavius Murray might not be very good, but it also might not matter, right?
Yeah.
Because if volume's there, it doesn't matter. And I think volume's still going to be there in Minnesota. The problem is, I do think that he's just a guy. You look at how he performed versus his teammates this past year. he had a 40.51% success rate, which is the percentage of positive runs that a player makes according to Number Fire's expected points model. He had 40.51%, which is about average. And then DeAndre Washington and Jalen Richard both had over 45%, which is phenomenal, right? Basically, it's because that offensive line is so good.
Mm-hmm.
And the previous year, Latavius Murray had an insane market share, so the sample size for the other running backs isn't very big, but he was worse than every other running back on the Raiders the previous year, given their small sample size, so I don't put that much stock into that. The other thing, too, if you're into this kind of thing, I'm not super into yards per carry averages, but of all the 100-plus attempt running backs, I think there was like 42 of them or something last year, Latavius Murray was second worst in terms of his yards per carry versus his teammates' yards per carry. Only Matt Forte was worse than Latavius Murray this past year. So basically what I'm getting at is, yeah, Matt Forte. Yeah, was he good? Remember when people like blew their load the first 2 weeks of the season and just like,
God. His name went from Matt Forte to league winner Matt Forte.
Yeah. Yes. They changed his name on every major website to league winner Matt Forte.
League winner after 2 weeks.
You have no, Dude, I will never forget last. I had a pretty mediocre season last year, just overall. But my God, Kelvin Benjamin and Matt Forte starting the way that they did.
Yeah. Woo. Oh, that yeah, that was hot for you. That was very hot.
That was
things
hot.
Got warm. So Matt Forte. So people said league winner Matt Forte after he had I think 35 carries against the Bills for 100 yards.
Right.
For 100 yards.
Right. It's like he's just getting pounded with the ball, and it's like, oh my God, you mean a guy who's been running the ball for a century and a half is gonna break down at some point, and the better running back in that backfield is gonna get touches? Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, so with Latavius Murray. Look, I will be honest. It could be a lot worse for Latavius Murray. He could have gone to a team where he's like sharing a backfield more than he probably will, because for whatever reason, the Vikings just don't want to give Jerick McKinnon a legitimate try behind a legitimate offensive line if they can get to that point. But the offensive line downgrade from Oakland to Minnesota is tremendous. It is huge. Minnesota's rushing offense was so bad last year. It was the worst one that Number Fires Metrics have seen since 2012.
Wow.
So it's not a good – I mean, that's not just because of the running backs, trust me. A running game is very much so offensive line-driven than running back-driven. So Latavius Murray, don't love him. Don't hate him in terms of, like, you know, I think he'll be an RB2, low-end RB2 maybe just because the running back landscape is so dreadful.
Yeah.
But – You gotta be afraid. If you got excited about him going from Oakland to Minnesota, then I think that you're doing it wrong.
His price has to be right. His price has to be just right for me to want to draft him at all. If it's even at even if I consider it fair, I'm probably still not buying into him.
Yeah, and he's not a good pass catcher. Or at least he hasn't proven to be. So I think that's the other thing too is. Jerick McKinnon being there, he's still going to pass catch. I mean, Mike Zimmer came out today and said something along the lines of like they're excited about Latavius's pass catching skills, or he can help on passing downs. It's like, what are you doing? Like, what are you guys doing right now? But anyway, all right, Denny, give us your down guy.
All right. So, this will upset Robert Woods truthers, but I'm going to say Robert Woods. And I know, look, this is not exactly the most brave stance. This is not the bravest stance that anyone has ever taken in saying that you know, you're down on Robert Woods, because haven't we all been there? But I guess it comes down to him probably having the worst quarterback in the NFL in Jared Goff, who – by many measurements last year was worse than Blaine Gabbert.
Oh yeah.
He was a rookie, which is hard to do because Blaine Gabbert was abysmal as well, you know, just all the time. So just listen to these numbers a little bit. Goff, I was just marveling at how horrid these numbers were. Goff had a 4.3 adjusted yards per attempt last year. What is that? I've never seen anything like that. He completed 54% of his passes, and only Cam Newton had a worse completion rate on aim throws. And aim throws, that excludes like spikes and throwaways and stuff like that. So I guess that raises another question about Cam, but I guess we won't go there today. You know, per Pat Thorman, our good friend from Pro Football Focus, he tweeted the other day that Goff threw short of – I'm sorry. Let me read that like a human would read it. Ready? Goff threw short of the first down marker on 64.7% of third and fourth down attempts by far the NFL's highest rate. Now,
that's insane.
So he threw short of the sticks more than 6 out of 10 times on the third and fourth down. That's remarkable. I don't want anything to do. I mean, who's buying into that offense? No one, right? So
no.
So this is not like what I'm doing here is not giving you an edge, because no one's going to be buying into this LA offense. But I'm not excited about Robert Woods. I don't care if the Rams are going to be facing 3 touchdown deficits all year long. I just don't care.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because he's a younger guy than what people realize. Like he had upside if he went to some teams that had more openings or more more targets. And you know that they're going to be a run first team, or they're going to try to be, at least, I should say.
Yeah.
So yeah, I totally agree. The last guy I want to mention, he didn't look, he wasn't a free agent, but it happened after free agency. And I want to talk about it because I think it's one of the more divisive topics in fantasy football right now. And that's Brandon Cooks. You know, I think people are assuming that he's all of a sudden going to be this stud or continue to be this crazy stud because he has Tom Brady. But I hate to break it to people, but that New Orleans offense with Drew Brees is pretty, pretty good, too. even if we look, okay, so let's just run through this. Even if we assume Edelman will take a hit in market share, which he's seen like an absurd market share over the last 5 years, at least like on a per game basis. Let's just say he gets like 22% instead of like the 26 or 27% that he would usually get. And then and then Gronk is at another 20%. And then you have these running backs that they love to target out of the backfield. Last season, they targeted them on like 23% of their – I mean, it was just something absurd. So let's just assume that they're at like 15 to 20%. Right there, you have the running backs, Edelman and Gronk, at 60% of a target market share, with 40% remaining for a combination of all of the wide receivers on the team, Chris Hogan, Dwayne Allen, you know, everyone else, like I said, and Brandon Cooks. So it's going to be hard for Cooks to get more volume, I think, from a target market share standpoint than what he did in New Orleans. And again, New Orleans throws the ball a hell of a lot, more than New England does even, especially last year because of Brady's suspension the first four games. But if you look at that, if he continues to see like the 18% market share that he saw in New Orleans, that's going to be a dip in volume a bit. And then on top of that, I don't think that he has as much touchdown upside because you're in an offense with Rob with the literal best touchdown maker of all time in your offense. And so I don't see a clear upgrade here. I think that the only reason that you draft Cooks where you would have drafted him if he were in New Orleans this season or where you drafted him last year, even, because I know that Michael Thomas is there. That makes it a little bit sketchier. But regardless, is that you have to assume that he's taking over Edelman's role in the slot. I think that's the main reason that you would do it. I think long term, if their play here was to get Brandon Cooks for more than 2 years, because they have him on his fourth year and then his fifth year option. So they'll have cheap Brandon Cooks for 2 years. If they want to keep Brandon Cooks beyond that, Or even for next year, because I think Edelman's deal is up after this year. That would be the long term play, is that he's an Edelman replacement, right? But the problem is there's no reason for New England to play Brandon Cooks strictly in the slot or mostly in the slot when he on the outside is better than Edelman on the outside, and Edelman thrives in the slot. So I would expect Edelman to see. I mean, sure, they're going to move them around, they're going to shift them around, but I would assume Edelman sticks primarily in the slot. Brandon Cooks is on the Z side. You got Chris Hogan on the X side. And I think as a result of that, he's just not going to see the kind of volume that people want him to see. I think he's going to be a great vertical threat for them. I think that they're going to use him better than how New Orleans used him, because they're actually going to move him. Remember, for a while, New Orleans just like kept him really close to the line of scrimmage, and it was really stupid. Didn't make any sense. Like, Brandon Cooks is a really, really good football player. I just, you know, from a fantasy standpoint, I think he's just going to end up being overdrafted. I think he's more in that, like, you know, low end two, high end three, probably low end two range, rather than what people are going to think is a high end wide receiver two, which is a big difference in draft position.
Yeah, I think that he is the candidate to be overdrafted a wide receiver this year. You talked about Gronk's touchdown scoring ability and, you know, the fact that that really didn't exist. That doesn't exist anywhere, particularly in New Orleans. So, right. Yeah, all those points are right on, I believe.
Word. All right, Denny, that does it for the football stuff. We'll probably – there's some football stuff on Twitter for the questions, though.
I'm sure there are.
We got some questions. Not as many as we usually get, because we're probably going to get like half the listeners than we usually do, because it's the off season and no one cares. But the first one that we got was from our friend Melinda – at Beer and Blank, and she says, just straight up, she quote tweeted the tweet that we sent with the that we were podcasting tonight. She said, "Give me the good stuff, Den Den's food takes straight to the veins."
Straight. Now this is illegal in 11 states. I have to
You just gotta throw it at. Just go.
If I can just talk for 1 minute about an atrocity on Twitter today, which was
good idea.
The conversation about breakfast broke out this morning while I was eating my second breakfast, and in my mentions, it was 90% people saying breakfast is not good, it's not necessary, and I never eat it.
I can't believe that.
We didn't talk about this before the show, and I'm really happy that you're not sitting here saying, yeah, who eats breakfast?
No, every morning.
I eat breakfast, and I would turn into some sort of fiendish monster without it. Okay?
Yeah.
I'm very hungry. I'm very hungry in the morning.
Right.
And here's the disconnect. I think the disconnect between the anti-breakfast people, which, by the way, clearly are funded by Big Lunch. Let's just be honest.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
All right. Big Lunch just wants everybody to be ravenous at lunchtime to eat all that stupid lunch food. So Big Lunch is behind this, obviously. The disconnect was this. I was talking about an actual fairly healthy breakfast, okay?
Right.
I'm talking about eggs.
Right.
I'm talking about black coffee, no cream, okay? Water, whatever. So when I got into the conversation with people, they would say, it would end with, yeah, but why would you start your day with a sugary cereal or a donut or gravy and bacon and sausage?
Who actually does that who does that?
No, JJ, I think people do that. I think people start their day with a lot of this really, really horrendous food. And it tastes good, don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
but
it's
terrible, terrible to start your day with that stuff.
Right.
So they were assuming that if I'm talking about eating breakfast, then I'm talking about eating shit food, and
right.
I'm not. I'm talking about a protein, a high protein, low fat breakfast. So this is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I hear you. I like to get a lot of fiber in the morning too. Fiber is a very important part in the morning, and especially because I don't drink coffee, so I need to get something going inside me, right?
Enough fiber for to interrupt your work at 10 o'clock.
Exactly on the dot every day. But yeah, I mean, like, I don't get how and why people skip breakfast. Not only that, look, guys, you're gonna notice a serious change when you start to eat breakfast and how hungry you are later in the day, and it's a lot better for your body to not eat late at night than versus eating in the – you should be consuming in the morning, because it gets your metabolism going. It gets you started. It gives you energy. It gives you real energy to get going for the day.
Yeah. I couldn't find anything definitive, because I could find both – just like with anything you Google, you can find whatever you want to find.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
If you want to find that a certain medication is good for you, you can find that. If you want to find out that it's going to kill you within minutes, you can also find that. If you want to find out that breakfast is good and essential, you can definitely go ahead and find that. You can also find that breakfast is not good at all, and no one should ever eat it, and humans were not designed to eat food in the morning, right, or some BS. I don't get it, but you know, the anti-breakfast forces were out strong today, and I will not give up this fight.
That's insane, man. The next one is from Matt Blair, at Grizzly Blair, my buddy. He says – he writes great stuff at Numberfire. He says, Denny, did you fill out a bracket for March Madness? I have global warming defeating Mother Earth in the finals.
I do think that that's – my projections say that that is inevitable, yes.
Yeah. Did you actually fill out a bracket?
You know what? Our good friend Chris Harris sent around
some brackets. Oh, yeah. I forgot to join that.
I joined it. I had no idea what I was doing. I was mostly just BSing my way through the whole thing. I have not checked it, so I don't know how I'm doing. I'm guessing I'm doing poorly, since I had three number one seeds in the final four.
No, I think only Villanova got knocked off, so you could still be okay.
Oh, I have Nova in the championship.
Okay, yeah. Then you're probably done.
All right.
Next one, at JT Cookie. He says Cookie. It's definitely Cookie, though. It's Cook with a Y.
Oh, yeah, that is weird. Oh, can I say one more thing about the bracket?
Yeah.
I went against my instinct. I went against my instinct, and I had my alma mater, University of Maryland, going to the Elite Eight.
Denny.
Look, I don't know anything about
no,
it.
No, I just know, thought, I know.
Here's the thing. I was trying to be contrarian against myself. Because I would usually pick Maryland to go out in the first round because I just reflexively hate all home teams, right?
Didn't I tell you via DM that we had Maryland as the most overrated team in the tournament?
Yes, and that encouraged me further because I wanted to rub it in your face if they advanced.
Yeah, they got destroyed. So JT Cookie says, will Steve Smith Sr. be a guest on the podcast anytime soon? Guys, if you guys want to at him and tell him that he should come on, I'm all for it. We need that to happen. I mean, the fact though that we haven't had Justin Perillo on yet, I mean, it's very clear that a guy of Steve Smith's stature will not come on this show. Next one, at the Pugfather 22, is Genuine's song Pony actually about riding small horses?
I have not heard that song. I will do an analysis.
You have though. You definitely have. You got to listen to it.
Okay. Okay. I will do a lyrical analysis to see if it's actually about the, you know, Korean War or, or about, sex. We'll see.
Next one at Steinman _ Jay Cutler and Cap aren't very good, but McCown stinks. How does he have a job before the other two? I feel like this is asking for a political take from Denny, is what it's asking
for.
Well,
yeah, I mean, I've tweeted about it. The people know how I feel about the Kaepernick blackballing. I find it absurd that there have been several articles now with unnamed GMs and front office types saying, I hate his politics. I'm horrified by him taking a knee. He's a disgrace to humanity and to the game of football. And then, so it's all political, right? So the GMs are saying this is political, period. Mm-hmm. And then football fans respond telling me that politics has nothing to do with this.
Right.
And I don't get that.
The people, so I haven't given a take on this, but I think it's absolutely absurd, mostly because of the reaction that you're talking about, and that the fact that people don't think that this has anything to do with what happened last season. They've got some sort of blinders on. I mean, the fact that Josh McCown, like, guys, here's the bottom line. And look, I don't know what discussions are going down. If Colin Kaepernick's saying, no, I'm only playing for $75 million a year. I don't know. But assuming that he's being reasonable, okay, with that assumption, it's insane to me to think that he's not good enough to be a third string quarterback in the NFL. Or a second-string quarterback. Do we realize who is employed in the NFL at the quarterback position? Because there are some atrocious, atrocious quarterbacks who are employed. So get this garbage argument out of here about him not being good enough. Okay, Tim Tebow was not good enough. Tim Tebow was actually bad at football. Colin Kaepernick is good enough. I mean, Colin Kaepernick made it to the freaking Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just that he was good, and he wasn't great last year. I get it, but come on, just stop.
I think he relatively speaking, talking about the game script that he faced and the level of talent around him,
I believe
that you can make the argument that he was actually very good last year.
Sure,
considering
versus expectation for sure. Next one is at Bo.dot. Is Ty God a bridge to a drafted QB, or is Ty God the QB in Buffalo? This would get me going down a 50-minute rant.
Yeah, I bet.
Like, there was someone in my mentions like 2 weeks ago, maybe a week, maybe it was last week, basically saying how Ty God isn't, like, how you can't win a Super Bowl without a stud quarterback. And I'm like, okay, that's not false, right? Like, I'm of all people in this world, I'm one of the people who says, like, you should not put yourself in QB purgatory. Like, mm-mm. The Dolphins should have gotten rid of Ryan Tannehill 2 years ago, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I'm all for that because I think it ruins franchises. But with that being said, I don't think Ty God is necessarily like a Ryan Tannehill type. Number one, number two. The Bills got him for one. They can get rid of him next year for like $1 million, right? Like the deal is very, very Bills friendly. They're gonna have him this year. If he doesn't perform, they can get rid of him next year. If I read the language correctly, but like the bottom line is like I agree that you need a really studly quarterback to get to the Super Bowl, but like that's so much easier said than done. Like, mm-hmm. how do you just get a stud quarterback? Like you have a guy who can realistically take the Bills to the playoffs, which, by the way, they haven't done in a freaking decade. I was in like eighth grade when they got in the playoffs last.
Oh my God.
And like they haven't been in the playoffs since I was highlighting my hair. They finally have a quarterback who can get them to the playoffs, which is a big deal for that franchise. But not only that, then I start talking to this guy. I'm like, okay, look, he was like, you got a tank. He wants the Bills to tank for the year. Okay.
Tank.
Yeah. So you're going to get an NFL franchise to truly tank, where I know it happens in the NBA, but it's also accepted in the NBA. You got to get an NFL franchise to tank and then hope that they tank better than an actual bad team like San Francisco. And then you have to hope that they draft a quarterback early, right? Who then turns out to be a good quarterback. The odds of that happening is a lot smaller than the odds of the Bills going on a magical run a la Joe Flacco in whatever year that was, right?
Right.
Getting a team around Tyrod that's really, really good, like what Peyton Manning had when they won the Super Bowl a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
That the odds are so much smaller to do that. So is he a bridge quarterback? No, I think he's a good quarterback. I think that a bridge quarterback is someone like a Josh McCown or a Brian Hoyer. That to me is the true definition of a bridge quarterback.
Like a guy who's clearly not there for the long haul.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't know with Tyrod. I mean, he's been good, and he's a lot better with Sammy Watkins. I mean, we're talking about a guy who has not had any receiving help, especially last year. Look who he was throwing to. He was throwing to a track star and Robert Woods.
Who is the track star?
Goodwin. Yeah. Just ridiculous. Yeah. And then Bo Dot Dot also says, will you be retiring anyone from the lineup on the Twitter homepage?
I guess we should, huh?
I probably should Photoshop that stuff out, huh? Although it's so classic, man.
I know.
Like, I love having Geno in there.
Fitzpatrick is done forever, right?
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is there, I would assume.
I mean, he'll probably get signed before Kaepernick.
Good point. Next one is at LMJ_FF. Do you think peanut butter and jelly sandwiches should be toasted?
I struggled with this. What do you think?
I don't. Do you know the PB&J thing that's going on in the NBA? Like the story that came out?
I don't.
There's I read it a couple days ago. I guess like Kevin Garnett during that Celtics run when they finally won the title. I guess like he got everyone to eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches instead of like the normal catered food that they have before games. And then it just kind of like caught on. So now all these different NBA players like do PB&Js differently. And they had like pictures of how they like Damian Lillard like toasts it. And like, dude, just give me two pieces of bread I was so surprised. I was scrolling through the pictures. There's like five different pictures from five different NBA players. Like half of them, more than half, I think all but one, would put the jelly on top of the peanut butter on the same piece of bread.
That's weird.
Right? Like, you got to do it on separate pieces. You got to put the peanut butter on one piece of bread and the jelly on the other piece.
No, it's separate but equal.
Yeah, and you got to have a good ratio, right? You can't have the jelly bleeding through. That's the worst.
It puts me in a bad, permanent bad mood if that happens.
Right. It's terrible.
I think I have toasted the bread, a few times in my life making PB&J. I do believe it. I think I like it better, actually. I have to go that way.
I could see it. You know what else is good is a Fluffernutter.
Can you say that on air?
have you never had, you know, the like marshmallow, that's what my mom used to call it, Fluffernutter.
No, I'm married, so I don't have that.
With the marshmallow fluff and peanut butter toasted.
I don't know what that is. I'm completely lost.
That's why I was a chubby fourth grader.
Oh, yeah. See.
That's the reason.
I was a chubby fourth grader because I ate an entire bag of Cool Ranch Doritos every day.
Yeah. I used to sneak cookies downstairs while I was playing video games.
I used to sneak the Doritos. That was my vice.
I mean, I already told you guys about the story of when I vomited after eating the M&Ms. That's enough of those childhood eating, binge eating stories. Next one is at A. Fauché 70. How many calendars do I have to buy for Denny to come to my class and share his takes with my students?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, it depends on where you live. I would say you need to buy enough calendars to pay for me to fly there.
You guys need to – we need to do a – if we ever did a meetup, that would be so fun.
That may happen more – you know, that we may have a chance for that soon. And I didn't tell you about this.
Wait, what is going on here?
I didn't tell you about this before the show. I wanted to tell you during the show.
Wait, what?
I will be in the great state of North Carolina next weekend.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Holy.
I just found out.
What part?
I have a cousin getting married in Raleigh.
Oh man. It's close-ish. It's like two and a half hours.
2 hours? Oh, come on.
Yeah, that's where my family lives though.
I don't understand your state.
North Carolina is pretty big.
I go to Greensboro and I'm like 4 hours from you. I go to Raleigh and I'm 2 hours. Where
no, Greensboro is actually closer. I'm on the west side of the state. I'm like, you know, okay, so you know where Pittsburgh is?
I do.
Okay. Just draw a line directly south and that's where you'll hit Charlotte.
Oh, so Charlotte's like extreme west.
Yeah, it's like close to, we're not super close, but like Asheville is like 2 hours away, like which is the mountains.
Okay. Well, anyway, we could maybe we can work something out. We can talk. I'll have my people call your people.
Yeah. We'll do that. Next one. @T_witterlessJeff. Who will be the new Marvin Jones this year? Ted Ginn, baby.
Oh, man. Yeah. I think I like that.
Or Marvin Jones.
Marvin Jones 2017 looks a lot like Marvin Jones 2016 in value, right?
Yeah. Next one is same guy. Says any rookies that you think will be over or under drafted or way too soon to say? I mean, it's pretty soon, but I was seeing that Leonard Fournette is being drafted in the third round, and that's absolutely absurd. He's not even a three down back.
That's pretty hot.
Not only that, you don't even have the potential. Like, that's where Zeke was going around this time last year. And Zeke at least had Zeke was not only better, a better prospect, but he had the potential to be going to Dallas. And there's no, like, Dallas scenario for Fournette. Like, it's just, it doesn't make sense.
Every time I see people criticize Fournette on Twitter, I see someone respond with a GIF of him running over a small defensive back.
Yeah, right. I mean,
and I'm like, is that the correct response?
The craziest thing, I think I was talking to Rich Rebar and he brought it up, but the craziest thing, I've seen other people bring it up too, is that like Fournette's like body of work is not a lot unlike Derrick Henry's.
Mm-hmm.
And like he's being touted a lot more than what Derrick Henry was touted. And the only reason I think is because Zeke was in Henry's class. And so like, that's the kind to me, like he Fournette is not he hasn't proven to be a pass catcher, which we don't know how he's going to be used there. He's vastly overrated right now in fantasy. If that's really where he's being drafted, I'm excited to see where Christian McCaffrey lands. He's my RB1 in the class. Yeah. I think that he's going to be pretty dynamic, and he's going to be a really good fantasy football player because he's got that PPR upside with him too.
Yeah, I would like it all makes sense right now in my head that the ascent of the white running back is happening during the Trump administration. This just lines up for me. God. White running back Twitter is lit, and so is Trump Twitter.
Next one is @CFernandez2209. Is Michael Thomas a wide receiver one?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he's like a low end, high two. It's fair. Next one, @FirstRoundQB, our boy Kenny Darter. He says, "When will I die?" And then he follows it up with trick question, "I'm never going to die." But that was good.
I love Darter.
Next one, @TheOtherFFGuy. Gun to your head, what do you order off the Arby's menu? (Parentheses) Trick question, pull the trigger.
I mean, gun is to my head after I spend enough time in Arby's anyway.
So. My favorite part is that he actually tagged Arby's in that tweet.
People love tagging Arby's. I've seen people adjust their Twitter names, not their handles, but the name mm-hmm. Their name on Twitter to include Arby's.
Man, crazy. Next one is @TheFFWhisperer. Who are you guys rooting for in March Madness? At this point, I don't even care.
I'm rooting for no TVs to have it on wherever I am at that
Denny,
moment.
Denny, you're the worst, man.
Sorry.
Next one, same guy, says, truth or dare? If truth, have you ever been a guest on someone's... truth or dare, Denny?
Truth.
Okay. Have you ever been on a guest on someone else's podcast you think is awful?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, me too. The dare was delete your account, so it's good that you picked truth.
No, yeah, I probably would have done that, yeah.
Next one, Justin Freeman, 18. Would you have more or fewer followers if you stuck to sports?
Me?
I guess. Or us. Oh, okay. Or this podcast. I think this podcast would not be the podcast that it is if we only stuck to sports.
No,
so,
I don't.
So that for sure. I one time tweeted about how I supported the LGBT community and my mentions were in flames as a result of it. And that was one time. So I know that I can't.
Well, you have, first of all, you have comparing your following to mine, you have a much more sports heavy following. Right. With my constant takes on stupidities and politics and whatever, I have whittled out that hardcore audience. Like,
yeah, that's fair.
I generally don't have the person who's just like, I'm on Twitter for football takes in the middle of February. Give them to me.
Right, right.
You know, and that person's not following me. So.
Right. That's fair. That's very fair. The next one is at BG Lace, or B Glace. Which do fantasy football analysts like more? A, Rex Goathead. B, not drafting Cooks early. Man, it's like this guy already listened to the podcast. C, saying where they were when Rex got signed.
Wow.
Man, do you remember where you were when you saw that Rex Burkhead signed with the Patriots?
Yeah, I was on the toilet.
Yeah, I think I was too, actually.
So that was – and I fell off the toilet.
Next one is at SnuggleMonkey99. How much less guilt would Denny have if he was a black woman?
Oh my God, what a question. Jeez. What? I mean, first of all, my suggestion to all the white dudes out there, listen to black women. They know what they're doing. They know what they're talking about. That's my suggestion. That's all I'll say on that.
That's good. That's a good one. Speaking of which, and I probably shouldn't transition like this, but I have been watching The Wire, Denny.
Wow.
Yeah. I just thought it's that show. VV good.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I've made it very clear how I feel about the show. Greatest of all time. Love it. Love it. Love it.
You have. I'm in season 4, so no one spoil it. Next one is this. It's the school season.
Which
is fun. They just had the, I won't get into it because
super depressing. Super depressing.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Just crazy. And you know how, oh man, that the show. Next one is at eBrouse. He says, is this finally the year that we draft running back early and often?
Well, I mean, I think you're going to see that. Right. I think people are going to overreact to last year and be like, you know, everybody who had David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell won the championship. So I got to do the same thing this year. And so the overreaction will be, there will be an overcorrection. I think people who are able to reel it in a little bit will benefit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, I'm not against the position. I wasn't fully against it last year necessarily. I definitely took a stronger stance against it last year. But you know, I'm very much a feel the draft room, and then approach. I mean, definitely just spend your early draft picks on wide receivers and running backs. Period. Like, don't unless it's Gronk. We're seeing Gronk fall, man.
Who's gonna be our enemy this year as far as quarterback goes? Who's going to write the June column?
Probably Rodgers.
It's going to be, so Rodgers is the 60 touchdown guy this year.
Yeah, probably. I'm assuming. Next one is at Knuckle Pop. Jage. That's what he called. My friend, Jage. A lot of my friends call me Jage.
Really?
Yeah. Will you kindly give us a full season's recap of The Bachelor? Also, who is Corinne's NFL fantasy football equivalent? The Corinne's equivalent, man. I don't, Denny, did you ever see Corinne on The Bachelor?
No, I don't know what that means.
So The Bachelor was okay this season. Corinne made it. Corinne was the crazy, she was this crazy blonde girl who made it to the final four, who was very rich, and she ran her dad's company, and she's only 23 years old.
Wow.
And she, on their when they met in her hometown, because she got it to hometowns, which is the final four people, they met in their hometowns. They went shopping, her and Nick, the bachelor of the season. And she bought him a $3,000 outfit, and it was like it was nothing.
Mm.
And the outfit looked like something that you can get from Old Navy.
Mm.
Yeah. But Corinne was something hilarious. Who is her fantasy football equivalent? I don't know. I'll have to get back to you on that. I can't think of anyone crazy enough.
That's hard. Yeah. I mean, that's a really hard comp to come up with. Yeah.
Yeah. Next one. At Jonathan. We only have a few more. At Jonathan S. Foyer. What took you so long? Look, what are we going to talk about, guys? You guys have to see our download numbers during the season versus the off season. I would share it with you, but I don't think that it's necessary to. But it's like it's going to be like halved.
Yeah, I mean it's the hardcore of the hardcore who listen, and we appreciate you and we love you very much. But there's not a ton to talk about fantasy wise at the moment, and. I think what we're going to do, if I'm not mistaken, JJ, is we're going to have this episode and we're going to do one in mid-April or late April.
Yeah.
And then one in late May, right?
Yeah. And then once like June comes around, we might do a couple more, and then July is when things start to pick up a little bit more.
Yep.
It's usually how it goes. But yes, I mean, yes, I understand that some people love it. Some people need LTS to their veins.
I appreciate it.
But. I appreciate the hell out of it. Next one, at Codename Shuby. Dear JJ/CD, since I started following you on Twitter, I'm now bombarded with Arby's and New Balance ads online. Please help. That's good. Did you see the picture that I tweeted last weekend when I was at the bar and this guy was playing pool? And he had, oh man, this guy, so we were playing pool. I'm not a very good pool player. But we were playing pool and these guys came up and they're like, you know, do you want to play or whatever? So we played 2-on-2 and, this one of the guys that was there was wearing this polo and he had somewhat saggy jeans on and he mm-hmm. was just wearing white newbies just right there at the nice. Bar. And so I took a picture of it in stealth mode.
I like that you called it newbies, and
that was that's a Silva thing, by the way. So Evan Silva gets props for coming up with newbies.
That's funny. That does sound like something he'd come up with.
Yeah.
And you know, I missed that picture, which means that I need to go ahead and unblock you on Twitter.
Oh damn, man.
I meant to do that last year, and I never got around to it.
Man, this next one. So I favorited it because I just wanted to talk about it really quick. So. Eric Belair sent a tweet, but he accidentally sent it to CD Carter, not CD Carter 13. How often does that happen? So, there's a guy named Christian Carter on Twitter who's at CD Carter without the 13, and he has 1,219 followers, which I'm assuming 612 of them are from people thinking that he's Denny Carter. How often does this happen?
It used to happen all the time when, when I was first like on the scene and people weren't sure of my handle. And so they knew I went by CD Carter. So I think they kept tweeting him and I think he got kind of mad one time and he told someone like, I'm not the football bro. I was like, oh no, he thinks I'm a bro.
Yeah,
he thinks I'm like.
It looks like he's a very. He would align with your political stances looking at his profile.
No, we get along. he lives with me now. me and the other CD.
That's good. We should do it. We need to get him on the show too.
Well, we have a sitcom coming out on Netflix next year. It's CD times two.
CD times two.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's a terrible show. Don't watch it. It's terrible.
Is it just you guys doing wind sprints in your neighborhood?
Oh man. you have not seen a dude dad run like I've been dad running. Oh my god.
I hurt my IT band, so I haven't been able to run in like a week.
What is that on your computer?
No, it's like the thing. It starts in like your. It's the giant band that goes down the outside of your leg up to your knee, down to your knee. So my knee's been jacked up from it. It sucks.
Really?
Yeah, you should Google it. And if you guys have any IT band tips, definitely hit me up on Twitter.
Oh, they will. Oh, they will.
Yeah, I want to hear it. IT band. And I think I have runner's knee with it, too. It's just very messed up right now. Next one. Last one. At bedtime 37. Best way to pass the time until football. Hate watch hockey and baseball or sob quietly in a corner during waking hours?
Read a book.
I feel like we get that this question all the time. There's nothing wrong with baseball and hockey, guys. There's actually something amazingly right with both sports.
JJ, how can you justify watching early season baseball? Dude, I don't understand.
It's baseball's a great, great sport.
It blows my mind. It's like an exhibition game for the first 6 weeks of the season.
They're still important. Hockey, once hockey is more entertaining. I went up to Pittsburgh for that outdoor game.
Yeah, that looked not terrible.
That was amazing. It was like 5-degree weather too. It was just, I got so sick when I got home, but it was so worth it. It was awesome. Anyway, that does it for the Twitter questions. Denny, that does it for the show. Why don't you let everyone know where they can find you?
At CD Carter 13, not the friendly other CD who's now living with me. I have my Rise and Grind book is going to be out next week.
Nice.
Thank all the variations on Baby Jesus. So I will tweet about how you can order that for less money than you would buy it on Amazon. So I have a deal for you.
Boom. I wonder if Steve Smith's going to get it.
I sent 100 to him already.
You should just send like 3,000 books to his doorstep. You can actually just deliver it because I'm sure he still has a house in Baltimore. He probably doesn't. He still does stuff around here in Charlotte, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm JJ Zacharyson. You can find me on Twitter at LateRoundQB. All my work over on NumberFire.com. I don't really have anything coming up, I don't think, from an article standpoint. I've been writing off-season content, though, because I'm a degenerate.
It's good. I have to say, everybody, seriously, as much as I unplug during the off-season, I make sure to read JJ's columns.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Yeah. Appreciate it. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next month.
Thank you for listening to Living the Stream. We hope you enjoyed the internet podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes now. It won't take long. It's fast. For more fantasy football.